Fresh and WZBU New Holstein Appleton, the Fox Valley's real news and great conversation, a Civic Media station.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. The Senate has adjourned for the weekend, meaning there'll be no movement on ending the federal government shutdown until Monday at the earliest. Before they return, food benefits for tens of millions of Americans will run dry.
42 million Americans will lose SNAP funding when it runs out. And it comes on the same day Obamacare open enrollment begins, when some 20 million Americans will see their insurance premiums more than double on average. Democrats have said they'd be willing to work with Republicans to reopen the government if Republicans negotiate with them to stop that.
Police say two men were found dead in two separate flooded basements in New York City today after torrential downpours from heavy storms. A 43-year-old became trapped in a boiler room when the water rose, and a 39-year-old man who lived in a basement apartment died when he went back to get his dog, say witnesses. President Trump says he's directing the Pentagon to begin testing nuclear weapons immediately. This is ABC News.
You're listening to WISS, the Fox Valley's home for Matt and Air on Air, weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m.
Do the Bucks have a new leader? Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. NBA, the Bucks' new center, Miles Turner, picked up in that trade with the Indiana Pacers, so far has done a lot to help set up his teammates with good shots. Is that a form of leadership? Head coach Doc Rivers.
It just tells you. It's funny talking to Reggie Miller before the game because he knows Indiana. He said, man, you like that leadership? I said, it's amazing. I said, I never knew. He said, no, that was the key for them. He was such a great leader.
The Bucks host the Golden State Warriors tonight. NFL, the Packers preparing to host the Carolina Panthers Sunday at noon. Quarterback Jordan Love named NFC Offensive Player of the Week. Love completed 20 passes in a row against the Steelers. Had he ever done that before in college or high school?
I don't know, honestly. I don't know who keeps stats like that in high school, so I don't know. I'm not sure.
Kids seem to know how many points they always score.
I don't know. Probably the first time ever, yeah.
That's Jordan Love with Sports on Mike Clemens.
I love playing sports, especially for my school. And that's because school sports are special. It's where it's safe to fail. It's where we're taught resilience, where our fear becomes confidence. It's where we learn to get back up after every fall. School sports are where 7.8 million students go from I can't to I can.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Finally, a voice for real news and great conversation in the Fox Valley, WISS.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Evidently, Mike Johnson's not calling the House back, not going to do it. In his words, a futile exercise. Because, I don't know. I don't know why you take the entire month while the government shut down to go on vacation. Or whatever it is that they're doing back in their districts. Because certainly not figuring out a way to help people. But President Trump, our dear leader, our unitary executive, our CEO, in the last moments, he's found a way. He's found a way to pay the troops, even though they've taken money from places where it probably shouldn't have. But paying the troops. Because, look, reality is every authoritarian needs the backing of the military. So if you're screwing over the military, they're probably not going to back you when you try to overthrow things. Probably not going to go well for you. Now, the 42 million people who are going to set to lose their SNAP benefits, the 42 million people who are going to be hungry. Because understand, there are 42 million people who are going to lose SNAP benefits so that we could give tax breaks to a handful. Kind of makes you wonder. Now, here's some more good news. If you need more good news for my friends in Washington, D.C., the National Guard, which evidently was supposed to stay through November, now their deployment has been extended, I guess, through at least February of 26. So, Merry Christmas. Happy Thanksgiving, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, because, well, you don't get to go see your family because you're going to be deployed to Washington, D.C. to make sure that our elite leaders are not worried about their safety. Is this starting to sound bad? I mean, at a certain point, do we go, they know what they're doing. They know they're causing pain and suffering. And this is what I've said from the beginning. So there's no one who can go, Rick, I can't believe they're doing this. I've been telling you this now for almost 2 years. The second Project 2025 came out. We started talking about it from the loyalty test angle first. And then once we got into the 900-page Bible of conservative cruelty, we then said, look, this is going to be bad. So it's all there. It's pretty simple, but you need to have people in place so that when the chaos begins because of the cruelty of your policies, you now have your excuse to put them down, to crush those poverty-stricken folks. And it's all planned. This is all war-gamed out in the right-wing think tanks, because understand, for decades now, billionaires have been spending a lot of money paying the smartest people in this country to dream up really bad ideas. And now this is kind of their Super Bowl. They've been building for this. The field is wide open. They can do every cruel, inhumane, ugly, horrible thing that they've ever had a wet dream over. And we're going to see it. And it's going to start with the SNAP benefits. And the thing is I had a conversation with a friend today who was like, you know, why would they do this? Well, because they want chaos. And the thing that is surprising to me is you're not hearing a peep out of Walmart. Because understand, Walmart gets 26% of SNAP benefits. This is one of those programs where conservatives should love it. You're giving individuals money to consume in the economy to make corporations rich. There is a massive trickle up from SNAP benefits. And this is a moment for Elon Musk and those types to come forth and go, this is what we should be doing. We should be feeding people using a program like universal high income so that when we get rid of all the people who need jobs, they'll at least be able to participate in the economy and we'll be able to at least get our billions out of them. But here we are. This is an opportunity and they can't even pass that along. As meager as SNAP benefits are. So if they can't do that, do you trust the Elon Musk universal high income fantasy? And are you thrilled about the fact that they got soldiers all over the place? Getting ready for you to get out of line? Want to hear your thoughts? Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I've gotten a bunch of weird emails the last day and a half. A bunch of really, really bizarre, strange, weird emails that I'm like, where is this coming from? Because everyone blames, originally everyone was blaming the Democrats. It's the Democrats, it's Schumer, The shutdown is all Schumer, the Democrats, even John Fetterman's kind of going, oh, it's them. And it's about health care. The last day and a half, it's all been Zohran Mamdani's fault. And I have no idea where that was coming from until one of the red hats sent me an article from some right-wing site that said, you know, here, this is why. And no real reason why, just the accusation, which is, again, par for the course. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on, well, the world in which we find ourselves. And if you don't subscribe to Will Bunch's new national column, his newsletter, you have to. Absolutely, without question. This most recent one, titled, "It Didn't Take a Reichstag Fire to Burn Down Congress." That's why I've asked my good friend Will Bunch to come share some thoughts with us. He's a national columnist there at the Philadelphia Inquirer. And again, get the newsletter. Will, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, thanks for the plug. Yeah, the newsletter is free, so no excuse not to sign up.
And absolutely, yeah, well worth it. And look, isn't it kind of amazing how fast Congress just fell right into line? You know, the people's house where the rages of the people, the anger of the people is supposed to run wild. Isn't it amazing how fast they've been tamed?
It is amazing. And you know, what I tried to do in this piece, and I think what people need to focus on is people need to take a step back, because I mean, blaming this whole shutdown thing on Mamdani is crazy. You know, blaming it on the Democrats when they don't control any of the branches of government is kind of crazy. But I will say, I think you and I both know the prevailing theory for a lot of liberals, people on the left, has been that, the House of Representatives has met for 3 days in the last month, which is just nuts. And you know, the prevailing theory is that this is all about the Epstein files, to keep Representative-elect Grijalva from taking the oath of office and being the 218th vote. And look, there's no doubt that
that's part of it.
Yeah, that's part of it, that Trump and Mike Johnson, his little mini me, don't want this vote to happen, and that's part of it. But I think there's a much bigger picture here,
right,
which is, think about what Trump is trying to accomplish in terms of democracy and in terms of being a strongman ruler of this country, and you know, there's a bunch of commonalities between every country that's gone down this authoritarian rabbit hole. And one of the biggest ones is you need to neutralize your legislature. I referred to the most dramatic and most famous case in my headline, which is, you know, Germany's famous Reichstag fire in 1933, when, maybe a communist, maybe not, somebody apparently set fire to their version of the Capitol, which was the Reichstag, and it sustained heavy fire damage, and the Nazis used that as an excuse to kick out leftist legislators were booted. This is when their whole system of concentration camps really began for the first time, was for their political opponents. And you see that Mussolini did it. You look today at somebody like Putin, he's made the Duma in Russia a completely useless body that just rubber stamps his bills. And now let's look at what's happening in the United States. And, you know, you've got a House of Representatives that, like I said, has only met for 3 days in the last 3 months. And, the founders, when they were writing this up, there's a reason that the part of the Constitution about Congress is Article One, the first article, because this was the beginning, right? This was like the centerpiece, the building block that everything else sprung from was Congress, and particularly the lower house, the House of Representatives, that where people are elected every 2 years. So the whole body, everybody is up for re-election every 2 years, because it represents the will of the people. And if the, you know, if the people want, you know, Medicare for all 1 year, and then they decide 2 years later and they hate it and they don't want Medicare for all, they can vote there, you know, they can vote that way. You know, that's part of it. It's why you have it based on living in your district, you know, so that you're close to the people, that you're going back to Pennsylvania or North Dakota or wherever on the weekends and talking to your constituents. You know, that's supposed to be the core of what democracy in America is all about. And Mike Johnson, on behalf of Trump, has basically shut this down.
Yeah.
And think of all the functions that get shot down with it, you know, oversight. You know, we've got a government, just to cite one of the many outrageous things that are happening right now, we are blowing up boats in the Caribbean Sea and now in the Pacific too, in two seas off of Central and South America. And we don't know who these people are that we're killing. You know, the government is claiming that they're drug dealers.
They're all bad. I mean, they're all bad, Will, just like all the people that our masked agents are snatching off the street, all bad. All bad.
Right. It's take their word for it, because they're the government and they are all knowing. And I mean what's happening with the boats, you know, clearly seems to violate every international law that we've ever heard of or know about. And the people who need to be investigating this is Congress. There needs to be congressional oversight.
Yeah. Well, they're holding, they are holding teletown halls. My Congressman Scott Perry, you know, as wonderful as he is, he called me the other day, said, "Hey, you sign in right now, because you can hear me talk." Now, I don't get to ask questions, but I can at least listen to him bloviate on and on. But here again, we're in this weird kind of moment. As you've pointed out, our legislative body is paralyzed. And I'm not even going to say paralyzed. I think Trump said the other day that Mike Johnson's, you know, kind of a puppet. And, you know,
there was a report in the New York Times that Trump is going around telling people, I'm the speaker and I'm the president, you know, that he's basically, you know, it was funny because if you remember during those 4 years when Biden was in office, there was talk after McCarthy was voted out, there was talk of, well, maybe they could elect Trump Speaker of the House because you don't have to be a House member actually to be Speaker. And, you know, 2 years later, Trump basically is Speaker of the House. You know, I mean, you know, he's got a rubber stamp. It's how is this different from Putin and the Duma over
no,
there?
No, and the reason I bring this up, Will, is because, you know, as you pointed out, you know, they first neuter that, and then they send in, you know, the people who are going to censor or arrest people, and we just see a memo that was just, I think the Guardian had a piece that, you know, the Pentagon has a memo detailing a plan to train some 20,000 National Guard members to ensure that civil unrest doesn't get out of hand when the food stamps go away, because they're worried about 42 million people kind of maybe being angry that they're not going to be able to feed their children.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the history of revolutions, I mean, what was the French Revolution all about? The godfather of all revolutions, you know, people starving and then a government that said, let them eat cake, right? So, supposedly that's a great point. I mean, I was just reading about this today, that the National Guard wants these rapid response units set up in all 50 states. All 50 states, we're going to have these, and they're not responding to unrest that's happening right now because there isn't any. I'm sure
no, there isn't any, but they're going to create some because they need it. Much like your analogy with the Reichstag fire, they need the crisis so they can do what they've wanted to do. And I love the way you laid out the Epstein things. Guy, I've got people who believe it's only about Epstein. I'm like, no, they don't care about Epstein because Trump's name's probably all over it.
Yeah, this is much bigger than that. Right. You know, because with the government shut down, it cedes all this power to Trump now to decide. He's making these decisions on who's getting, you know, who he thinks can get paid during the shutdown and who can't, or what the government can do, if, you know, if it's something he doesn't care about and doesn't want to do, like food stamps, well, he'll just shut that down. But it's interesting to see, well, what is he focused on preserving and keeping going no matter what? And the answer is the military, right? You know, he, first of all, he said, we found $8 billion that they were going to, quote, waste, unquote, on research and development. Well, of course, you need research and development, right? But they're going to take this money and use it to pay the troops. And they figure politically, the average person is going to say, oh, you know, we support the troops. Thank God. I don't care as long as they find a way to get them paid. I mean, it's patently illegal. I mean, since 1870, Congress has passed a series of laws like a lot of these things. They have a bizarre name. They're called anti-deficiency laws. But these laws were passed so the administration can't play around with money and they can't spend money that Congress hasn't appropriated and vice versa, right? You know, Congress is the one that decides how we spend money in this country, not the president. And Trump is usurping that power. And to add insult to injury, and I mean, it's kind of funny because the money, it's a lot for one person, but it's a drop in the bucket for the world's largest military. But, he got this one rich dude, you know, this Timothy Mellon guy, to donate $130 million that will also go to the troop salary. So just like, you know, one of the whole things that animated this whole American experiment is, you know, we don't want to have private armies in this country, right? We don't want to have an army that is being paid for by a billionaire instead of being paid for by the American taxpayer.
Right.
And the thing is, why is this a concern? Because, the people are going to be mad and starving because we took away their food stamps, or they took away their food stamps. But the troops who are going to be fat and happy because they're the only people connected to the federal government who are actually getting paid are going to be sent out to put those people down. And Trump needs their loyalty because, you know, when things really, really go off the rails, you know, the reason governments get overthrown is because the ruler loses the loyalty of the army, right? So, these are the kind of things that, you know, if you live in, pardon the, I guess it's now a politically correct, incorrect term, but if you live in a banana republic, you have to think about these things all the time. And we've never had to really think about this in the United States, but maybe it's time to start thinking about.
No, absolutely. Because who would have imagined that we would have masked marauders marching up and down our streets, snatching people off the street, zip tying children, taking people away on unmarked vans to who knows where? Who would have thought that would have ever happened in this country, and that we wouldn't be losing our minds over it?
It's the secret police. It's the Stasi, you know. The flip side of that is you've got all these immigrant families that are basically hiding in their attic. Well, you know, who else hid in their attic? You know, Anne Frank and people hid from the Nazis. And now you've got people, you've got these heroes, white people with privilege who are helping Latino families hide in their homes to stay away from ICE, you know? And these are all scenarios. I mean, these are the things that we're supposed to be teaching our kids on Holocaust Remembrance Day and with the whole idea of never again. And instead it's happening every day in Chicago and LA. And the next column I'm working on is, ICE just replaced a bunch of its local division heads, office heads, because they want to bring this to Philly and they want to bring it to Phoenix and they want to bring it to Denver and all these other cities where you're not hearing as much yet about chaos, but the chaos is coming. You've seen the ads on football games. They're recruiting thousands of new people to join ICE. I mean, these people, God only knows what their qualifications are to do this. And they're putting in aggressive border patrol types like this guy Bovino in Chicago. They're looking for other new Bovinos to put in Philadelphia and to put in Phoenix. And so these horrible scenes you've been seeing for the last month in Chicago, people being tear gassed, decent people like priests or political candidates being arrested or getting indicted, like Kat Abagzala, the candidate, got arrested. Got indicted today. Yeah, this is coming to your town.
So let me ask you this: how do you get past the divide, though, the red hat blue hat divide? Because look, you know, I'm looking with my own eyes and I'm seeing horrible things that I thought I would never see on our streets, and yet I have red hats who are cheering this. This is what we voted for. We want these people gone. We're going to go get all of the illegals because we've dehumanized a group of people. And I've had some people telling me that I'm blaming ICE for them shooting tear gas into crowds of peaceful protesters, as if that's something we should be doing. How do you get past that? How are we going to get past that divide?
Well, look, I mean, you've always had people like this out there, right? I mean, you had the people who rioted against Reconstruction back in the 1860s and 1870s. You had the people behind the Palma raids and the Red Scare and the Tulsa riots in the early 1920s. You certainly had all the massive resistance to civil rights in the 60s. So every generation, you can find these people out there. I think the one thing that gives me a little bit of hope is, and I think when you think back on like the on the election last year, you know, we always like to talk about how this country is split down the middle 50-50. But I think the reality is, while there's no doubt we're deeply divided, but I think it's more like 40-40-20, right? You know, that I do think you've got a bunch of people in the middle who, last year they voted for Trump for all the dumb reasons, you know, that we talk about, you know, that he was going to lower the price of eggs or, you know, they just had this vague sense that the economy was better when Trump was president, forgetting all about COVID and all the other stuff that happened. And they're not, you know, they're not hood wearing, you know, they're not, you know, they're not the worst of the worst of MAGA. They're just regular folks. They're maybe not super political. They, for whatever reason, they thought maybe Trump was better. And these people, now that they're seeing what it's really like, you know, there are people who voted for Trump who are disgusted by these ICE raids, you know, by the masked men, the people being thrown to the ground, the tear gas, all of it, you know.
And I hope so.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, if you're going from 45% to 55% anti-Trump, that should, if we have any semblance of democracy left, that should matter.
And there's the question: if we have any semblance of democracy left, because I truly believe he thinks he's going to be president again in 28. He's already got the merch. He's already pimping that. They've already floated the trial balloon. And every time I say he's already telling you what he's going to do, he's telling you what. Oh, he's just joking. He's not joking. That's a trial balloon.
Right. You know, every three days they'll dial it back and say, "Oh, I'm just joking," or, you know, Trump made these comments that kind of seemed to take it back last night. But that's how they do it all the time. Right. I mean, they did this with January 6th and the coup, right? You know, and, you know, they're writing op-eds. And
we find out they spent millions of dollars bringing people in to their coup attempt. It's crazy stuff. I got to get the last thought. I brought up Mamdani at the front, who evidently, according to my red hat friends now, is responsible for the shutdown. I'm not sure how he.
I don't get that one. But
okay, if that's where your red mind goes, thoughts on what's going to happen next week?
Well, I think he'll probably hang on and win. I do feel like it could be a lot closer than what the polls are saying, because you know, so much money is being spent. You've got so many people trying to raise doubts, and frankly, you know, there's a certain faction of people who claim to be liberal or claim to be Democrats, and the people I'm thinking of in particular are like the editors of the New York Times, right? Who, you know, pass themselves off as liberals, but in the end, they're really representing just a different kind of elitism, right?
No, you're
and they're afraid of Mamdani, and so I think some people who might be inclined to support him or read this nonsense that gets published in the Times, and maybe are having some second thoughts. But I do think he can win, and I mean, he's definitely just whatever you think of his policy ideas. And he has some, and I think he has some good ones, but whatever you think of those, he's just a charismatic, likable person.
Yeah, but he lives in subsidized housing. You know, he lives in subsidized housing. He's got a subsidized apartment. That was the big scandal, evidently. But we'll see what happens when people pull the levers. Will, as always, great stuff. Hope folks will check out the newsletter. I love your work. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again soon.
Of course, Rick, anytime. I love coming on your show, so thanks for having me.
Thanks so much, our good friend Will Bunch. I want to hear your thoughts. If you're in New York, which way are we going with this? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around.
This is 98.3 and 96.5 WISS, home of the Todd Allball Show.
You're listening to WISS, the Fox Valley's home for Matt and Air on Air, weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy tonight, a low in the mid-30s. For tomorrow, more clouds, slight rain chance, highs in the low 50s. And mostly cloudy on Saturday, again a slight shower chance, highs in the upper 40s. Partly sunny and low 50s for high Sunday. Currently, it's 44 degrees.
Hey there, Wisconsin. Tom Hartman here. Democracy is not a spectator sport, so join me each and every weekday right here on Civic Media for the Tom Hartman program from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Covering the news of the day and sharing ways for you to get off the sidelines and get active in your community, because change starts with you. Get involved and tune in to the Tom Hartman program Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. right here on your local Civic Media radio station.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, interesting day I had today. You know, I have a friend who lives in the UK, and my daughter, my youngest daughter, wants to go to Cambridge. Yeah, does it look like I've made of money? But no, we're going to do everything we can. But, you know, she took a trip over the summer, went to the UK, went to Scotland, Wales, Ireland. It was a nice trip through the school. And look, I encourage anyone who has the opportunity to leave the country, go see other places, experience other things, to absolutely do so. And I've encouraged my kids to do it. And when they've wanted to, we've facilitated that and made sure that they had those opportunities. Because I think seeing how the other half lives, kind of important. It's kind of important to see if what we've been spoon-fed our entire lives has been, well, bull or not. For instance, you know, and this is one of those things that when I was in school, we were taught a very idealized history of the country. We're always good. Everybody else is always bad. We're benevolent. They're not. So we've all had that kind of indoctrination, grooming, and every society does it. It's not unique to us. And look, I was taught as a kid, I don't know about anyone else, but you know, American democracy was at the top of the governmental food chain. Everybody wants to be like America. They want to emulate our democracy. Because after all, we're the beacon of freedom. We're the shining city on the hill. No other country in the world is free. Except, was it Jeff Daniels who did that great bit about, you know, there being like 180 countries out there that are free, you know, Canada. And he lists off a bunch of them. But we're told that we're it. We're the freest. We're the smartest. We're the best. We've got all the best stuff, all the best toys, all of it. And the reality is it's not entirely true. I mean, I love this country. I'm proud of this country in the moments that it does good things. But I'm also smart enough to realize that we're flawed like anyone else. And that sometimes we're not the best, the brightest. And my friend was kind of ribbing me a bit, chided me for how absolutely dysfunctional our government appears abroad. You know, he said, you know, it may be working just the way you want there, but from the outside looking in, it looks like we're pretty screwed up. And the reality is we can't even right now say we're at least better than some third world dictator, because we've got our own wannabe dictator. And understand, you know, as I started off with, 42 million people are about ready to lose SNAP benefits so that we can enrich a few thousand with massive tax cuts. And it got us down this level of conversation about the differences between the U.S. and Europe and the goods and the bads. And look, there is no utopia. There isn't. There's no perfect place on the planet. Everywhere has its problems. Everywhere has its ups, its downs, its goods, its bads. But when we started talking about democracy, the idea of self-governance, of people getting from their government the things that they expect, that they need, that they want. And one of the big ones for me, because this whole government shutdown, at least we're told, is over the healthcare subsidies. And the weird thing is you've got Democrats who are, you know, basically finally taking a stand, having a spine, fighting for things that are going to help red states more than blue states. It's just how it is. And I saw this great, you know, cartoon meme on social media with, you know, guys with a MAGA hat going, "I voted to get rid of that Obamacare. They didn't say the ACA was going to go away." And you go, problem here. And the thing is universal health care came up. And this friend says, look, we pay about 4.5% of our income every paycheck for universal health care. I don't have to worry about going broke. I don't have to worry about getting a bill. I don't have to worry about any of this stuff. We have it. And I said, but what about? And I threw out a bunch of the American talking points. What about the long wait times, huh? And then before I got the full statement out of my mouth, I go, wait a second. I tried to get my wife an appointment through the hospital that we go through for an ophthalmologist because she's got some pretty severe nerve damage, and we're trying to get some new glasses and stuff. And we went for an appointment, and it's October, and the soonest that we could get an appointment with the ophthalmologist at the hospital there, July. And so before I finished saying, but what about the long wait times? I'm going, wait a second, I'm living through really long wait times. And, you know, now that I live in the medical culture because of my wife's accident, now that we're scheduling physical therapy and doctor's appointments, and you go down the list, I realize it's not that great. The people are fantastic. Look, I love the healthcare people that we've dealt with, because I realize that even in the moments where I'm frustrated with them, this isn't the system they chose. They chose to be there to care for people, not to be in a broken system that sets them up to fail every day. And that's sadly where we are. So when my friend was talking about healthcare, he goes, look, I don't worry about it. He goes, I've heard you talk about how grateful you are to have your Teamsters health insurance because you don't worry about it. He goes, I don't worry about it no matter what I do. And understand, you know, most European countries have some form of universal public health care, which here we frame as socialist. And you go, is everything that's good for we the people socialist? Because this is one of those things I get comments from people. Well, what do you define as socialist? Well, the things that we can't do individually, that we choose to do through our government, for social good, could that be socialist? without being the connotation that we have in our political science classes, which is government owns everything and government has control. And no. And this brought us back to our conversation about democracy, because the majority of people in this country want some form of national health care. They want some form of national health insurance, whether it's a single payer plan or the ACA with the subsidies to make it affordable. Because understand, costs keep going up. And if we insist on having a profit motive driven system, understand you're going to have to pay you're going to have to pay the VIG to the house. You got to pay into the kitty to play. And that means high CEO pay. That means shareholder stuff. That means private equity. It means all of that, because we've set that up. Now, again, in a democracy, would we choose that if this were truly a democracy? And then we started going down the list from healthcare to higher education, which in most European countries, which is the reason I called, was to find out how hard it would be to get her into Cambridge and what hoops do I have to jump through and who do I have to know, all of that. And, you know, for him, you know, college tuition was fairly low cost, like it used to be in this country, when I believe we were more democratic, when we actually listened to we the people. Because understand, European countries, they heavily subsidize university tuition. Because they want people to go to college like we used to. And we still do. We say we do. But in order to have skin in the game, you got to take on lifetimes of debt, which, you know, brings me back to my daughter. I'm not a rich guy. I can't pay her tuition out of pocket. But you know what? Years ago, you could. On a meager, reasonable... I have a friend. In the 60s, went through the University of Michigan Law School, all the way through the University of Michigan and the University of Michigan Law School, working as a waitress, driving a jalopy car, living in a crummy apartment, but paid her tuition off that waitress job. Good luck trying that today. And then you start going down the list even further of the things that Europeans see as just commonplace that we've been told is socialist. It's bad. Paid maternity leave. This idea that mom should stay home with the children. Because remember, we're the country of family values without any paid maternity or paternity leave. And that's pretty standard in most European countries. Not socialist, just standard. Most of those quote-unquote socialist countries, they have reasonable unemployment benefits. You lose your job, you don't go broke immediately. They have very strong, very robust unemployment protections to ensure that, well, one, companies just don't throw you to the curb willy-nilly, and two, that you don't go broke, that you don't lose everything because you lost your job, and that gives you an opportunity to do a whole bunch of things. Maybe look for another job. Which brings me to most of those countries have very strong labor protections. Things like job security, definitely not at-will employment. And limit work hours so that, you know, you work so that you can live. As opposed to most people I know, they're living just to work. Because the cost of everything is so crazy outrageous here. Which in those countries doesn't seem to be as bad. They've got inflation, don't get me wrong, but they don't make as much money, but their standard of living in many of those places is from what I'm told, from the people I know who live in these places, it's good. They've got a public pension system. We're still talking about not letting them destroy Social Security. And understand, a public pension system is not some kind of socialist entitlement, as we've been told. It's something that workers pay into. And yet here, we're told, hooray for me. And you go down the line, they've got strict environmental regulations. Government-driven environmental regulations. What they do with their food is incredible. What we allow to have happen here, again, if we're truly a democracy, does this stuff happen? They've got strong wealth taxes. They've got high taxes for very rich people. They have all of this stuff, stuff that in a real democracy, because again, all of this stuff, when you talk to people and get out of the red hat, blue hat, green hat, no hat, get out of those binary choices. I'm red or blue, or I'm Democrat or Republican. Get out of that and talk to working people about what they want, need, and desire. Like, you know, help with childcare, something pretty universal in European countries, widely available, considered a basic service. Whereas here, you got to mortgage the house in many cases. But when I drop back and I think about what we've been sold, on this winner-take-all kind of binary choice scenario where if you win, I have to lose. And that's not community. I took some guff yesterday for saying that, you know, conservatives don't really conserve much, and community is kind of like a four-letter word because it sounds like socialist. I believe in community. I believe in my neighbors. I believe in helping my neighbors. And I believe, again, as I said a moment ago, that we do collectively through our government that which what we cannot do individually. Educate a populace, protect the country and national defense, pave roads, healthcare for everyone, the kind of things that all of us want. And this is where I come back to my belief that even the reddest of the red hats, we all share some commonality. And, you know, I recently had a conversation with Joe Walsh, the former congressman from Illinois, who we'll have on the program at some point here in the near future. And the thing is he and I on policy are in different worlds. But on the idea of saving democracy, of actual democracy, now we can fight over what that looks like. But in this moment, saving the idea of democracy has brought us together. And I believe that those things exist for everybody. Almost everybody. There are some people, and I get their emails, you know, quite often, who, quite frankly, no, that's probably never going to happen. There's probably no hope there. But for me, I always want to solve a problem, not create one. And we're in a moment where if this were truly a democracy, do you think we'd be shutting the government down because we're taking health care from people? If you really went and polled people, and this is where I have some hope that there was a meeting, you know, some quote unquote moderates on both sides of the aisle. They're coming together and going, well, because understand, there are Republicans who, yeah, they want to pass those ACA subsidies. I mean, the Obamacare subsidies. No, wait, the Affordable Care Act subsidies, because we don't want to get the lingo wrong, even though they're the same damn thing. Because, well, in red states, people use that. In blue states, people use that. And sadly, we've forgotten some of that. So for me, the sad reality is we're so stuck in our blinded world, in our alternative realities. And this is why, again, I go back to where I started. I want my daughter to be able to study abroad. I want her to experience things differently. Because maybe she comes back and she's able to share that with others. Because the more we realize that we've got more in common than we've got apart, maybe the faster we figure this out. And we take this wonderful gift that we've been given, the idea of self-governance, the idea of forging a path collectively. Maybe we take this wonderful gift and we strengthen it. And make it worth something that my daughter's generation picks up and carries on for their children and for future generations, as our grandparents and great-grandparents and great-great-grandparents have done for us. Do I believe it's possible? Yeah, I have to. Because I have to. Because if there's no hope, then, well, why? Why bother? And I'll tell you, when we talk about issues, I think we have a better chance. Because again, when I talk to people, it's, hey, what do you how do we make this better? How do we do this? You know, I remember the first time I talked to a when I was doing union organizing, I talked to a worker who was complaining that he never got any days off. And I said, I was just in Mexico scuba diving and I met a German guy. 6 months on the job, they made him take 2 weeks vacation. And there he was in Mexico scuba diving. 6 months on the job forced him to take 2 weeks vacation. He had 28 days vacation his first day on the job. And in many European countries, that's the reality. A month's vacation, minimum. A month paid holiday, minimum. We call it vacation. A year of paid maternity leave. Weeks of paid paternity leave, so dad can be home too. Sick leave, all kinds of stuff. Things that we would only dream of. And working people in this country want. So again, I ask you, and this is where I want to leave this. If we were a democracy, would we have those things? If we had the best, greatest, top of the food chain government, wouldn't we have these things? I want to hear your thoughts. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1929. On that Wednesday morning, people across the United States woke up to newspaper headlines informing them that something had gone horribly wrong on Wall Street the day before. Black Tuesday, as the day came to be known, had capped off a devastating drop in the market that had begun with the great crash the prior Thursday. $25 billion was lost in the crash, which would be about $300 billion in today's money. The crash helped spark the Great Depression that saw unemployment soar to 25% and nearly half of the banks in the United States fail. But the day after the crash, the news reports were not all doom and gloom. While Variety declared in big bold letters, "Wall Street lays an egg," other headlines struck a different tone. The New York Times' wordy headline stated, quote, "Stocks collapse in 16,410,030 share day, but rally at close cheers brokers. Bankers optimistic to continue aid." The Chicago Tribune went with the more concise, "Stock slump ends in rally." Newspaper reporters attempted to explain the crash. The Denver Post blamed the downturn on gamblers. The Philadelphia Evening Ledger blamed the propagandists of gloom and economic terror. And the New York Times blamed the reckless Wall Street speculators. But many papers also attempted to quell panic over the bad news from New York. The Kansas City Star assured readers that once the adjustment is completed, the country will move forward to new levels of prosperity. The Nashville Banner similarly predicted the reaction had to come, and the country will be better off for the lesson it has had. Costly though it be, that costly lesson became a devastating global depression. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I want to finish today up with an email I got from my brother Kirk out on the West Coast. My brother Teamster out on the West Coast. I said, look, he was listening about me talk about, trying to sell my daughter's home, what to do with it. Again, first world problems, things that I'm happy to have. But he said, look, he goes, the U.S. politicians think the game Monopoly was a good model for government instead of the criticism it actually was. He says, I really think the U.S. is in the equivalent of the late stages of Monopoly. That's the stage where one player has started building hotels on Park Place and Boardwalk, and the only way you're going to survive to the next round is a lucky roll to get past all of the monopolies and make it pass go for your measly $200. He goes on to say, you mentioned that younger people do not own things anymore, which means all your Monopoly property is already sold and mortgaged. bought up by the player with the hotels on Boardwalk. One bad roll and you're out. He goes on to say, in this late stage, everyone knows the game is over because the rules of the board game don't change. Really, you're just seeing who can be the last person to survive the monopolist. He says, I remember getting really mad at the game as a kid because I could see where a few lucky rolls in the beginning of the first few turns set up one player to win, unless they did something really dumb. Unless we change the rules, Kirk says, this is where we're heading. I'd say we're already there. He said, I already know working people are going to lose unless we change the rules of the game. The corporate socialism policies have to go unless we demonetize things related to basic survival, housing, healthcare, food. Workers are in for a world of hurt. And look, Kirk is not wrong. And he goes on to finish up by saying workers will vote against themselves in favor of not being socialist, a word that apparently now means anything that isn't anarcho-capitalism. Not wrong. And the thing is there's a sense. And the reason I brought this up today is there's a sense that people are angry. In fact, I went and I got my ears lowered, way lower than I would have wanted. But, you know, I got my hair cut. And the barber going on about how, you know, just how AI is driving him crazy, how all of this automation is driving him insane. And I threw out the idea that, you know, maybe we're all going to become Luddites. Now, didn't know what I was talking about, said he'd go look it up. But, you know, are we headed towards a world where we're going to have to start smashing the machines? Because it was his view that as Amazon, because the story of Amazon laying off thousands of workers came up, and UPS laying off thousands of workers to automate. His comment was, people are going to start having to sabotage the robots. And I'm like, well, they won't let you do that. There will be special crimes for that. And who knows, maybe the National Guard, maybe our future, we're going to be the lucky few will be able to join the National Guard to guard the robots. You think I'm kidding? I wish I were. But this is where we are. And the question then becomes, if we are truly in a democracy, and there are things that we all kind of agree on, we want good wage jobs so we can support our families. We want education for our kids. We want safe neighborhoods. We want good schools. We want health security, retirement security. We want to lead a reasonable life. We want to live a good life. And we want to be in a situation where we go to work, we do our vocation or whatever it is, so that we can live and that those lives are worth living. And if that's the measure, if that's what we can agree on, and look, I'm waiting for my naysayers to go, no, we don't, that means somebody will get something that I won't. Which really is kind of scary, if I can digress for a second. The fact that someone would deny themselves of something that they need, want, so that someone else wouldn't get it is bizarre to me. But I'm sure I'm going to get that email. I'm sure it's coming. Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com if that's where you want to go. But here's where I'm at. This shutdown is going to make some bellies empty. And as I've been saying for the longest time, you know, in the old labor frame of empty stomachs, get heads right, is there an opportunity for people to get their heads screwed on right? And to start demanding the things that we want, need, expect from our government. Not from the very wealthy, benevolent dictators who run our corporations and who are sitting in our Oval Office, but from we the people, us, you, me. Because after all, this is a country of, for, and by, that's right, we the people. Want to hear your thoughts. Am I crazy? Am I a dreamer? Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast wherever you get your favorite podcast. There I will be. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is WISS Berlin-Oshkosh and WZBU New Holstein-Appleton, the Fox Valley's real news and great conversation, a civic media station.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. The federal government shutdown's about to enter its 31st day, and the Senate has adjourned until Monday, meaning there'll be no action all weekend. SNAP will run out of money Saturday, and tens of millions of Americans who use the Affordable Care Act are finding out how much more they'll pay next year without the subsidy that Democrats are trying to keep from expiring. Beth Dreyer in Norfolk, Virginia's monthly bill jumping from $80 to $425.
I feel pretty helpless at this moment.
But on Truth Social, President Trump posting, quote, Obamacare is a disaster. Rates are going through the roof for really bad health care. Do something, Democrats. Seven people have been arrested in connection to the brazen heist at the Louvre Museum in Paris. But the priceless jewels snatched during the historic robbery are still at large. King Charles has stripped Prince Andrew of his title. Andrew faced sexual conduct allegations since his relationship with convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein was revealed. This is ABC News. Several